Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson. Welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. I'm a little bit in shock this morning. I had a customer, I don't know, it was probably 6 months ago, he bought a 2021 Ford Mustang Shelby GT350. Now, you know, Mustang is obviously our Ford performance car. Matter of fact, it's the only car that we sell now as a Ford dealer. Isn't that hard to believe? No more LTDs, no more Ford Fusions, Granadas, Fairmonts. Been a while since those have been sold. No, all we have is the Mustang, and it's a good one. I mean, it's great to have the Mustang. It does a lot better than the Camaro does. Now, for a while, that Dodge Challenger was outselling the Mustang and the Camaro, but not anymore. Mustang has taken back over again. But anyway, why am I in shock? The Shelby GT350 was a high-performance version of the Mustang, and we've had it for a number of years. Probably came out, I think it came out in 2016 or 17. And it's been a great seller. It's basically a street-legal racing Mustang. Now, they make a version of it called the GT350R, and the R means racing. It also means no back seat, special suspension, same engine, but it's more of a racing, true track car. It's not something... Now, there are people that buy them and drive them on the street. I mean, it is a street-legal car, but... you know, it's not really made for, it's made for the track. And we've had several of them. I sold one to a good friend of mine, and he doesn't do anything with that car but track it. He takes it to Road Atlanta or to Barber Motorsports down near Birmingham and runs it around the track real fast. And it does a great job at that. But it is a car that's sold new for around, I'm going to say $72,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. Well, I was just looking on bringatrailer.com, which is my favorite auction website. A 72-mile 2020 Ford Mustang, 2020 now, Mustang Shelby GT350R Heritage Edition, which is special. I'll tell you why that's special here in a second. Just sold for $167,000, so almost $100,000 more than it sold for new. Now, why would somebody buy a car and only put 72 miles on it? Well, they probably bought it as an investment. You know, instead of buying a Tesla stock or IBM or some other investment, they decided to buy this car and put it up and not drive it. Now, the Heritage Edition, limited edition. They only came in white with blue stripes, which is like the original GT350 that Carroll Shelby built. And so, you know, it's a special car, but my goodness, folks. The appreciation is unbelievable. Now, why was I looking at that? Well, I have a customer that bought a Heritage Edition from us. Now, his is not a GT350R. It is just a GT350, which looks the same. The R is a little bit lower, has different wheels. The R actually has carbon fiber wheels. The wheels, if you were just to order them through my parts department, are about between $6,000 and $8,000 a piece. So, yeah. So the GT350 doesn't have the carbon fiber wheels. So there's some differences. But this guy paid $68,000 for this car, and he's wanting to sell it for $72,000. And it's a 2021 model with, I think he has 1,100 miles on it. Now you tell me, should I pay him more than he paid for it, and should I pay him more than what the original MSRP was? Yes, good answer, I should. Because these have also gone up. Not to the extent that the Shelby, that the R model has, but they've still gone up. So this car right now, I've seen several sell on Bring a Trailer, and I'm looking at the results right now. Several of these have brought in the $85,000 to $90,000 range. So is that a good investment? You know, if I can buy it for 72 and sell it for 80 plus, is that, yeah, that's pretty good. I call that a good investment. You may say, well, why didn't he just do it? Well, he could, I mean, he's a savvy guy. He's a car collector and has plenty of money, and he could put it on Bring a Trailer and sell it and make money. But he just, guess what? He just doesn't want to. He wants to trade this car on something else that I have. So I'm willing to do that. Something that everybody should do, I guess, before they buy any collector car, you want to figure out what your time frame is and what are your plans in general. You know, I talked about this about a week ago, I guess, about, you know, making sure you understand what your motives are and how are you going to use this car? Is it a 401k alternative? Is this are you looking at it as an investment? Just be real careful with those kind of purchases because, I don't anticipate this market being as red hot as it is right now. I mean, they're already talking about a major recession. I saw Deutsche Bank came out and said they're predicting one and within the next 2 years, a major recession. And I don't know what that means. It's a concern. I do remember 21% prime rate on interest, and that was back in the early 80s. 13, 14, 15% home mortgage rates. I mean, young people, anybody that was born, you know, I guess baby boomers can recognize that, but their kids, you know, my kids, they've never seen anything like that. They've never seen rates like that. And so when you raise rates to that extent in order to get inflation under control, then it squashes everything. Their job is to squash demand and to, you know, get people to stop buying so much stuff and financing so much stuff and creating all of this debt. And so, you know, the Fed taking this aggressive action is going to have an impact on the business, and it's going to be the collector car business. You know, as the stock market goes, typically you see that the collector car market start to go. But it hasn't. You know, the stock market's been up and down lately and really a kind of a downward trend. And so you would think that you would see that reflected in some of the auctions and classic car stuff that I'm seeing. But I'm seeing just the opposite right now. I think people feel safe buying a collector car. And especially people who know cars because they've been here before. I was talking to a investment advisor of mine, and he said that, you know, you've just got to have a long-term perspective on this. Now, if you are in a short-term mode right now, for example, you're drawing down, you're retired, you're drawing down your investments, and you're living off your investments, then, you know, the idea of going out and speculating on anything for that matter is, it's scary. But if you are in your, you know, main income producing years and you've got some liquidity because of the great market that we've had, then, you know, those are the people that are paying the big money. Those are the people that are paying $167,000 for a car that sold for $100,000 less than that just a few years ago. God bless them. You know, they've got confidence. They've got money in their pocket. They want to do something with it. Hopefully they are using that money in a wise way. I was with a young man, 40, how old is he? Well, I call him young. He's 49 years old. He's on his third internet startup. When I say internet, technology startup is what I mean. And he has sold his first two companies and made several million dollars selling those companies. And now he's on his third company. He started it with $5,000. I mean, that was his initial investment 5 years ago. He said this year, or last year, he had $30 million in sales. 49 years old, lives over in Asheville, North Carolina, and loves buying cars, bless his heart. And so he's got a Ford Bronco ordered from me, and he's also has one of the Ford Lightning, one of the electric F-150s. So, you know, as far as do you need to do a lot of research as far as what a Honda Pilot is going to be worth a few years from now if you buy a Honda Pilot today? No. You know, because just count on the fact that it's going to depreciate. What about a Toyota Highlander, same thing. F-150, same thing. This crazy market that we're in right now is not going to last. However, we were talking to our Nissan people down in Orlando at the most recent meeting, and they said that this chip shortage is going to be with us and really keep us about where we are right now for another year. So count on a year and a half of high used car prices, high new car prices. That's the way it's going to be. That's what the experts are telling us. And hopefully we will be able to maintain a steady flow of product and sales. But it's not going to be like it was. But that's a good thing that your vehicle is not going to depreciate much more right now for the next 12 to 18 months. That's a good thing. All right, let's take our first break, and I'll be back in just a second. One thing I do want to mention is that can save you money right now is on your gasoline purchases. You know, if you're driving just a regular everyday car and your car calls for regular unleaded, don't put the middle grade, you're wasting your money, or premium in your car. You're really wasting your money if you use premium. Your car does not need that. Like typical Honda Accords and typical Toyotas and Subarus, unless you're driving a WRX or something like that, most domestic cars, import cars, run on regular unleaded. So don't waste your money on premium. Now, if your car calls for premium fuel, then use premium fuel by all means. Don't try to go down because you can actually damage your engine. You know, if you're driving a Lexus, for example, and it calls for premium fuel, it needs premium fuel because it is a high compression engine. The higher the compression, the higher the octane needs to be in the fuel. Does that make sense? Now, some of you may be using the Marathon. I don't know who else sells non-ethanol gas, you know, gas that doesn't have any ethanol in it. But I know Marathon sells it. Now, that it needs to be used in your lawn and garden equipment. I'm serious. If you are putting unleaded fuel with ethanol in it, a regular unleaded, then you are potentially doing damage to your fuel system. So here are four main problems that ethanol causes in your fuel system. Number one, debris in the fuel. So gums rapidly form in the fuel tank and the fuel delivery system as ethanol fuels age. However, ethanol is also a powerful solvent, and it will strip away and disperse this buildup, and it gets back into the fuel system, and it leads to clogged filters and injectors and carburetors and so forth. Number two, excessive water in the fuel. And something called phase separation is a problem with ethanol-blended fuels. Because ethanol attracts moisture from the atmosphere, and it forms an ethanol-slash-water solution mixed in the gasoline. Ethanol-blended fuel will naturally hold about 0.5% of water in suspension. But when water levels exceed this threshold, or when the fuel cools significantly, the water and ethanol mix drops out of suspension. This is called phase separation. So excessive water in the fuel tank causes engines to run rough, to stall, and in my case, when I leave my lawnmower without running it for a long period of time, I can't get it to start. Ethanol provides a significant amount of the fuel's octane, so when the ethanol and water solution separates, it affects the engine performance as well. Over a short period of time, ethanol fuels break down. As ethanol and other components evaporate, the fuel loses octane and becomes stale, and you can actually smell it. I mean, when the fuel, you pull off the gas cap and stick your nose in there, and it won't smell like gasoline normally does. This causes hard starts, pinging, engine knock, and it robs your engine of power and can actually cause damage to your engine. Now, the final knock against ethanol is that it just does not produce as much energy as traditional fuel. This results in inefficient combustion, decreased performance, reduced throttle response, and worse fuel economy. Now, the E15 that we have is not as bad as pure ethanol, obviously. You've still got plenty of gasoline there to help the situation. But if you are want to see what a difference and how your engine can perform, go with straight gas. Go to a Marathon station if that's where you go and where you can buy ethanol-free fuel. That is the best way to find out what your engine performance is going to be like. Typically, it's 90 octane, whereas the regular unleaded is 87. The middle grade is 89, and I think the premium grade is like 91 or 93 octane. I can't remember which. But 90 octane is basically the pure gasoline, and that's the only thing that I put in my chainsaw, my weed eater, and my lawnmowers. And matter of fact, when I bought my new Exmark zero turn, I started to say side by side, but zero turn, they recommended that never, ever use gas with ethanol in it. So I'm doing what I'm told to do. I think that's the wise thing. Okay, I'm going to take my last break, and I'll be back in 1 minute. All right, I'm back. So most of you who have listened to this radio show for a long time know that I have a doctor for a brother. And that's a blessing in many ways, especially when you have heart issues, which I do. I mean, I've not had any. I mean, I can get on a bicycle and ride 30 miles. However, it's not probably the smartest thing for me to do right now, especially by myself at the age of 65. And I was just noticing that I was having a little bit of pain in my chest on the left side of my breastbone, and it seemed like I could duplicate it with movement, but I wasn't sure. Occasionally, I'd be sitting there watching TV and feel it. It didn't really hurt, but it was definitely noticeable. So it was time for me to have a visit with my cardiologist in Knoxville, and I told him about it, and he said, well, let me schedule you for a stress echocardiogram. So I went down and did that and did really good, stayed on the treadmill longer than most people do, and had some irregularities on the EKG at the very end. Now, the echo itself looked fine, but I went down there day before yesterday to visit with the doctor with my wife. She wanted to go with me and hear what he had to say, so we're sitting in there. He said, well, Lenny, you know, you could approach this two different ways. One, we wait a couple months and see how things go. The other way would be to go ahead and do a cath, and let's just see what's going on. And I said, let's do option B. That's what happens when you live with you have a doctor for a brother. Pretty aggressive when he has issues. He's had cancer twice, and he's also he was basically in Abingdon and riding his bicycle with his wife and started having just serious heartburn, and he felt it. Now, he's a cardiologist, and he knew that something wasn't right. So he ended up needing a stent, and I may need one also. Who knows? But that's going to happen this afternoon. So appreciate your prayers, and we will find a way to get that done. You know, it's just one of those things. Thank goodness for the technology. You know, technology has so many benefits for us in terms of healthcare, but also in keeping us safe. You know, I was talking to a customer yesterday, an elderly person, and we were talking about the new Nissan Rogue, and they were thinking about upgrading from, they had a Camry, and they were thinking about upgrading, older Camry. And I said, well, one of the advantages of this particular car is that if your reaction time is not good, or you happen to not be paying attention, this car will do automatic braking. It'll stop for you, keep you from running into the car ahead. And also, you're surrounded, basically. It gives you cross-traffic alerts. If somebody's approaching at an extreme speed, or maybe you're going down the road and it sees a car coming towards you, it'll warn you, and it'll provide automatic braking in that case if it feels that this car has pulled in front of you. So, you know, these are technologies that could potentially save our lives. I know a lot of circumstances, you know, it's very possible that if my son hadn't been driving an older Honda Accord, he may still be with us. If the car had automatic braking technology, then maybe that accident wouldn't have happened. So, you know, these are things that I think can change people's lives. I was driving a 1962 a Corvair Rampside. It's that. It looks like a van on the front, but it has a bed. People see it and they just smile and laugh and say, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, it's a 1962 Corvair Rampside." Well, I didn't know Corvairs looked like this. Yeah, engines in the back, but the entire dashboard on that truck is made out of metal, and there's no collapsible steering wheel. There's no anti-lock brakes. There's no blind spot monitoring or crumple zones. There's just a very blunt front end with no protection if you were to hit something. And so I'm grateful for the partnership of government and business to be able to protect us with innovation. The Institute for Highway Safety, the Insurance Institute, has done wonderful things for making vehicles more or less prone to cause injury in the event of a frontal offset crash, which is the number one way cars crash and end up doing major damage to life and limb. So I'm thankful for all this technology. I'm thankful for the things that I'm going to be able to do this afternoon and to be able to make sure that I can stick around a little bit longer. And I'm very hopeful to do that. I've got a lot to live for, and I'd like to just keep on going for a while. So anyway, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and I will see you on Monday morning.